would like to rebalance and try to find more opportunities. For example, Saudi Arabia, they organized a pact with Pakistan, defense pact, and other countries interested to more cooperations with BRICS, CLAP, joined to Shanghai Cooperation Organization, and to reorganize contacts with neighbor countries like Turkey do with Iraq, for example, and ideas, new corridors and new transport routes. So many actors who think about future, they understand that type of United States is gone, like main world power.
And is Europe too slow to respond to the changing realities of the world? It seems Europe is still stuck believing the world hasn't changed when it has. Are they too slow to recognize it?
The problem of Europe is Brussels bureaucracy. I mean European Union institutions, because they are real very slow and they depend on United States. Every country separately can do a great job, for example, like Hungary. United States not provided sanctions against Hungary to buy Russian oil and gas, for example. And some countries also balance it. But in general, European Union is a very bad project. It's mostly dying. And ordinary people understand that very well inside of Europe. So it's mostly a problem of Brussels bureaucracy.
And is it in Europe's interest to have good relations with Russia? And why has that not happened?
In 19th century, Russian philosopher Nicholas Danilevsky told about root of the fears of Europeans on Russia. He told very simple, just look on the map, you will see that Europe is just a small western peninsula of continent. And there is huge land mass of Russian Empire. Russian Empire was bigger than contemporary Russia, but it's mostly the same for now. They are afraid of Russian and they see us like other. They not understand Russian culture, Russian policy. Some people understand, some people love it, but like I told before, the problem with Brussels bureaucracy that depends of Euro-Atlantic pseudo-values. And of course, they see Russia like treat. But if we can cooperate in normal way and to respect each other, to trust each other, it will be prosperity for Europe, because cheap gas, cheap oil, and other resources, and very huge Russian market.
Do you see the United States had a plan to separate Europe and Russia?
Of course, it's a very old idea to separate main European powers like Germany, like France from Russia. It's an idea based on some works of American scientists from late 19th century to separate China, Russia and Germany. For example, it's idea of Helmut Mackinder, idea of Spikeman, other geopolitical scientists. And till now they have a project of decolonize Russia, and I mean it's separate Russia part by part. And,
split Russia up.
Yes, and just to fight with Russia till its end. Of course, we cannot to accept this idea.
And is Europe right to be wary of China? Or should they see China as an opportunity for mutual benefit?
I read many books of European authors for last decades, and they are total anti-Chinese propaganda. They are afraid of Chinese techniques, about Chinese productions, and they propose idea to develop European goods, but it's not work. So there is question, why Europe cannot do it? Why they depend on Chinese goods? It's question to Europe. Another factor is European historical racism, xenophobia, because China civilization is different. The type of Mongoloid type, if we speak about classical anthropology, and Russian seems more like Europeans, but Chinese no. Chinese have totally other type of culture, they have totally logic. Actually, they have not logic in a European sense, in sense of Aristotle, because they think in other way, very specific.
And how important is it that states embrace, because I know you've written about this, How important is it that states embrace religion and tradition rather than the liberalism which is so pervasive in the West?
If we see like liberalism works in progress, it's going to extermination of human being itself. And religion, it means that connection.
Why do you say that? Why do you say it?
Because it started from liberation of church, of human history, of customs, church, tradition, religious, then traditional values, then statehood, because an ultimate goal, there should be no state. It should be one world by liberal ideology, globalist. And of course, they need no traditional customs and need no religions, different types of beliefs. But without belief, human being cannot exist. You see that majority of the world are full of any kind of traditions, different type of tradition. Abrahamic traditions, that's Christian, Muslim, of Judaism, and Buddhism, or even paganism tradition in different corner of the world. So it for millenniums. And why we should accept idea to be without belief, be without religion, if it worked for many, many ages ago? And it support people, and people need it. And there is no any contradiction between kind of technical development and beliefs. And we can too go to the external space and also believe in God. But I see no problems. So the problem of liberalism itself.
And you are starting to see in Europe and indeed in America kind of coming back of tradition, patriotism, in part Christianity. Do you think that's essential for Europe? For Europe to get rid of this ideology of liberalism and start having more of traditional values and patriotism? Is that the only way that Europe can save itself?
It's more easy to destroy than construct. So for Europe, we need to reorganize education, to reorganize state system, to reorganize Ministry of Culture, etc., etc. It's a long way. So it was a very big mistake with multiculturalism. First of all, and also a historical mistake with Enlightenment, because they started to produce some very destructive ideas and that supported in other regions and other corners. Of course, it's part of history, it's part of European philosophy, but it should be reversed, I think.
And when do you think the special military operation in Ukraine will end, and what will the world look like when it does?
When the West will stop support of Ukraine, at least technically, military, it will be finished very quickly. And of course, Russian the leadership has very clear goal to combat neo-Nazism in Ukraine, to combat Ukrainian militarism, and to provide assistance and support to Russian people there, because they are oppressed by contemporary neo-Nazi regime, and not in only eastern southern regions of Ukraine, but also in the central parts, in the west, because Russian Orthodox Church is prohibited, the other political parties prohibited, that only need to support neo-Nazi regime of Zelensky. So it's a kind of new dictatorship that should be destroyed. It's kind of a new Nazism, and that also should be destroyed. It's also threat to European countries, because we see a contraband of weapons from Ukraine to different markets through Europe, of course. To also recently it was a scandal in Romanian border, and there was some weapon planned to be go to Israel, and so it's also threat to many countries, not only for Europe.
And why do you think at the moment Trump is trying to push peace in Ukraine, a new deal, and it's the Europeans who are stopping it? How can you explain that Trump is I think genuinely trying to create peace in Ukraine, but it's the Europeans who are stopping it, and when it's European industry that's being damaged, European lives that are being lost. How do you explain that the difference, the dichotomy of America is trying to create peace in Europe, but it's the Europeans that are blocking it.
I think Trump not understand how politics works. He's businessman, and he personally thinks that maybe the United States will get some benefit from this conflict. Then he tried to understand what Russia means doing this special military operation and how to stop it. And Putin provide him very clear agenda: why we do it, what should be done, and how we can to stop sanction, how we can to cooperate again with the United States, etc. Maybe Trump think positively in this way, but he more theorist. Also, around him is a lot of hawks, a lot of neoconservatives who would like to continue this war because of a personal business interest to provide weapons to Ukraine. And there is the problem. But of course, Russia understands very well what happens, understand interest of European countries, Brussels bureaucracy, understand the position of United States, and we will continue this operation when our goals will be finished.
But why do you think Europe is blocking it, though?
Europe?
Yeah.
I think there's a kind of Russophobic agenda, mostly, that in European political elites for the moment. Of course, there's a kind of old, good, skilled diplomats understand that the conflict should be stopped. And the problem mostly from Ukraine. I mean, also terroristic acts on Nord Stream pipelines and also other activity of Ukrainian terrorists inside of European countries, what they're doing now in Poland, in Germany, in Italy, etc. The problem for political elites in Ukraine and in European countries.
Finally, are you confident about Russia's future?
I see that Russia's future will be in prosperity. Because Russia is, in sense of geopolitics, if autonomous country and autonomous space, we have huge resources, we have autarky, we not depend, a little bit depends of some Western goods, but less and less from year to year. And in this sense, it's good that we started special military operation and we reorganizing our economic system. We are more close to global east, to global source, and it's also about multipolarity, because more southern and eastern powers cooperate with Russia, we cooperate with them, and we less depends on the collective West.
Diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Welcome once again to Iran Radio, your trusted companion in thought, spirit, and sound. And we are speaking to you from beautiful capital Tehran, in a world that moves fast, we slow things down, offering space to reflect, learn, and connect. We are honored to have your ears and hearts with us today. Our next program is Leader's Speech. Following that, we're diving into a collection of our radio productions. Next up, we bring you The Key. The program presents short answers to doubts and ambiguities raised about various Islamic and Shia topics. Following that, we have Round the World with reporters. Thank you for being with us. Up next is Leader's Speech.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
The following is part of the speech delivered on April 27th, 2017 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the Supreme Leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the participants of the 34th International Quran Competitions. What is the main problem of the Islamic Ummah today? The main problem is the domination of Western culture over the Islamic Ummah. The main problem is the domination of the Western economy and Western politics over the Islamic Ummah. These are the main problems. Today, there is no sign of Islamic identity in many Islamic countries. Of course, the people in such countries are Muslims. They say daily prayers, they fast, and they probably pay zakat. But society as a whole is lacking in Islamic identity. In other words, there is not a personality or a reality that confronts the reality of evil and kufr. That is why Westerners interfere. They interfere in their culture, in their belief, in their economy, and in their social relationships, and they control their politics. The result is that because of lack of a single identity inside Islamic societies, there is fighting, war, hatred, and lack of understanding. This is what happens. Today, the world of evil is after destroying and annihilating this identity. They want to destroy everything that has remained from this identity in every part of the world. This is an Islamic principle. Whoever rejects evil and believes in Allah has grasped the most trustworthy handhold that never breaks, and Allah hears and knows all things.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
فَمَنْ يَكْفُرْ بِالطَّاغُوتِ وَيُؤْمِنْ بِاللَّهِ فَقَدْ إِسْتَمْسَكَ بِالْعُرْوَةِ الْوُثْقَى لَنْفِصَامَ لَهَا وَاللَّهُ سَمِيعٌ عَلِيمٌ. This is a truth. If we understand this truth correctly, we are committed to it. If we pursue it, and if we turn it into a public reality in the Islamic community and the Islamic Ummah, notice what a great transformation will take place. Notice what a great transformation this single truth, and there are hundreds of such truths in the Quran, will bring about in the world. If we understand, believe in, and promote this very issue and concept, notice what will happen. The Quran should be understood. We are very distant from the Quran. The enemy is taking advantage of our distance from the Quran. The enemy is injecting in us lack of faith, decadence, and dependence on himself on a daily basis.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
From Washington, they point out drugs here, drugs there, let's get rid of them, let's stage a coup. Today, we have an American expert on the subject who has completely different data. So buckle up as we start today's Gringo.
Secretary of State saying we're very close to a deal in the Middle East. We've been talking about this Department of War, so we won the First World War, we won the Second World War.
Is he a Mexican-American that is offended by...
A few months ago, I received a video featuring an American living here in Mexico named Jeremy Shepard. I couldn't believe what I was hearing, not just about drugs, but also about geopolitical issues and coups. He hails from the United States, yet he moved to Mexico for reasons that you will learn about today here on Gringo. This is a man who has a deep understanding of the drug situation in the U.S., and is well aware of the actions taken by various American governments around the globe.
This video depicts a high-ranking Chinese official seeking stability amidst a turbulent situation. Throughout his life, this man has honestly risen to a prominent position. But he now realizes that no matter how high his status, it is not enough to shield his family from the terror that surrounds them. He yearns to take control of his destiny and find a way to save his family and the achievements he has built. As a result, he makes the difficult yet crucial decision to securely reach out to the CIA. This video is produced by the CIA. It serves as a perfect example of how US interference is orchestrated around the globe. It's in Chinese and its aim is for the Chinese to see it. The goal is to encourage them to join the United States, to betray the Chinese government, to work for the CIA, or at least to spark some doubt about the need for change in their country. It is directed at the people, politicians, and military, and somehow it reaches them. Discussing corruption, terrorism, or drugs to undermine countries from within is always their perfect tool. It is a germ that seeks destabilization, soft coups, military coups, government changes, and alignment with the United States. Coups made in the USA.
And dear friends, it's truly a personal honor and pleasure for me to have the presence of a gringo here in the Gringo studio. A gringo named Jeremy Shepard. He is a communicator, and I would love for him to introduce himself because he has a very unique story. I'm really glad you came here to the Gringo studio, and I say that from the heart. Once one of my sons told me, "You have to watch this video. You have to watch this video." And eventually, I watched a video from his YouTube channel called Intervenciones Gringas, Gringo Interventions. And I was genuinely impressed. And now our production team has invited him here, and it fills me with joy. How are you? Who are you, if you would like to tell the audience?
Well, I think you've already said everything relevant, even some things more beautifully than I would have said. And from what I've seen in your videos, you know everything.
No. I mean, you have knowledge from what I have seen in your videos about coups, about American interventions around the world, and about drugs. In other words, you are an iconoclast, as they say.
Iconoclast it is.
Yes, you are an iconoclast. This is quite significant in a world where humanity has been establishing ideas and creating internal narratives. It's very challenging for people to inform themselves against their own beliefs.
Yes, what you mentioned about all the coups and so on. Honestly, even after looking into that, I still get surprised by one. I usually hear from around that, for example, in the 1800s, these things were absent, but you know what? I do some research and wow, the more you dig, the more you find. We all know the history that we were taught in school. It shouldn't be shocking that, oh, they did some really terrible things in Vietnam, because you kind of already knew that. But many, even those those who lived through the 80s and the dirty wars in Latin America say, oh, but that was the decade when we had no war, because the news weren't covering it. I mean, in the 70s, the news were there, in the 90s, they presented it like a video game. While they were destroying public infrastructure, things like water purification systems, they would say it was military target.
Blanco Militar.
Well, Jeremy, what happened to you that makes you not a typical American?
Well, I would love to lie and say, no, no, there are more of us. But you see, the situation in my country is what it is.
There are very few of them indeed.
So it's like, okay, there are indeed many people who didn't go out to vote because they realize that this whole thing we do is like a theater. Ah, this is when you can express your opinions. Do you want Trump or Trump Lite?
Who decides on coups, overthrows, and interventions in other countries? Is it the CIA, the National Security Agency, the Pentagon, or a combination of all of them?
La CIA, National Security Agency.
Lungas, there's in fact something like naval intelligence. I mean, supposedly the idea behind forming the CIA in the 40s was to bring together all these different departments into one central place. And then it's like, oh, what if we created about 25 new agencies that essentially do the same thing? So honestly, I don't understand why they have a CIA, DIA, when they all basically perform the same tasks, including the dirty work we talk about, which in English is referred to as wet work, right, like dirty jobs. These are almost never the ones that can be identified as, you know, people, they're more like assets, right?
In other words, there are several factors that make the decisions, right? Obviously, it's not just the president alone. He is merely the figurehead placed there, but there are others behind the scenes. Nixon, during his time, initiated this so-called war on drugs, which has proven to be not only a failure, but also misleading, right?
Well, I believe it wasn't a failure. It did exactly what it was designed to do, which is to imprison more people, specifically more African Americans. Because if we look at it in the terms they use, like, oh, we're going to eliminate drugs, while not only was it a failure, but it actually increased the amount of drugs and more porous and cheaper and in more parts of the country and the world, right? But then, okay, how is it possible that with so much money and resources, and after having nearly 50 or 60 years in this war, why do they lose every battle? And it's like, because it was never really about the damn drugs, drugs are just an excuse. I mean, this Lee Atwater, one of the advisors in Reagan's office, I can't remember if he was the secretary of this or that, but he explained it very well, that it has to be this way, basically on purpose.
You said the drugs thing is just an excuse.
Specifically he mentioned that, we associate marijuana with black individuals, and we associate, or rather, heroin more with them and marijuana with hippies. And we can arrest them whenever we want and say, they had such and such drug on them, and okay, maybe that's true, maybe not, but all right. But the big question is, like, where do all these drugs come from? Because there isn't, like, a poppy field in the United States, I mean, it just doesn't exist, and there aren't coca leaves in the mountains of Denver, you know? Everything has to come from really far away, and it's like, and the hippies, and I mean, back in that time, right? Like jazz musicians, and so on, because it was the 40s, they were importing these things in quantities. I mean, enough to supply so many cities. I mean, for all the addicts you see in the United States, you think, okay, and how many drugs does that person consume? The amount is reported as way bigger. So you shouldn't be surprised when you hear stories. They were bringing in planes like tons per week, and you say tons. And you hear, yes, that's how much the demand is.
Well, right now, with Venezuela, the cartel of the Suns, unlike Colombia, there it is. The president is accused anyway. I'm not saying there aren't situations in those countries. That's true. But in the end, the point is that the excuse was very clear. I mean, what is it?
You should never label him as a drug trafficker because, well, he's my friend, so he can't be bad, right? I mean, this standard applies because Venezuela in 94, before Chavez, was a very different country back then, right? There was a general who got arrested for carrying drugs in a suitcase, right? A briefcase, that's what they say. And then they said, oh, we had to let him go because it was politically sensitive. Why? Because he's your friend. On the other hand, if this poor guy has no influence, not a friend, then you simply throw him in jail. This is a clear example. I mean, this is how they did it with Garcia Luna, right? And I know this is a case from a while ago. So as you see, corruption has reached a very high level in Mexico, but then how do the drug traffickers bring it to all these cities? And so on in such large quantities, I mean, they never stop them, like... They never stop the trucks that bring 8 tons of cocaine.
I have always said in my discussions that in the game of drug trafficking, much like in chess, we shouldn't focus on pawns, knights, rooks, queens, kings, or bishops. Instead, we should pay attention to those who are moving the chess pieces. Here I feel a need to mention that Jeremy, as he has allowed me to address this topic since he has spoken about it publicly, had a near-death experience with drug use. After leaving the United States, you came to Mexico for rehabilitation. Is that correct? Well, based on that experience you went through, what can you share with the audience who are always pointing fingers, saying, we need to check it ourselves, we should test it, when there are many people in political power who even consume cocaine and such?
Yeah, that's quite noticeable.
Yeah, noticeable.
From miles away, right? Well, actually, this is like a joke because I talk about that. I mean, I always believe that my personal life is the least interesting thing my channel can discuss. So if I include it in something like this, it's like in the end, quick, and so on.
But you have an experience. You embodied an experience, and that's what you share.
You've watched the video all the way to the end, while many others don't. Then, as you mentioned, yes, I was addicted to heroin 6 years ago, right? And people are like, oh, really? Then someone in the chat says, what, go home, you never finished the video. It's just that I didn't want to start with that. I wanted to begin with, look, this is the story of why I started researching it, because I was genuinely curious about why there's so much of that drug in my country, especially when we're there in places like Vietnam and Afghanistan. Well, we were actually in these places for help, while Kuomintang, like the nationalist Chinese who were in exile in what is now Myanmar or another place. I mean, what's going on? Suddenly, so much heroin is coming from high poverty to the United States. It's like, there seems to be a pattern, doesn't it? So we have officially ended the war in Afghanistan. Or rather, it lasted 20 years and now they're out. I honestly thought it would take more than just 24 hours. But no, it feels like it should be some sort of record for the Guinness Book, right? But after that, it was like, oh, now we have synthetic opioids, which are the new trend. A lot of people are importing fentanyl and other substances from various places, and when they want to place blame, they point fingers at Mexico or China. It's like, yes, it seems to come from multiple sources, but the customers are always you, right? And at what point do you stop pointing fingers and say, oh, you are a bad person for selling drugs?
Do you think Donald Trump is going to invade Mexico?
Honestly, I hope not, because I live here. I mean, this is where all my belongings are. But I don't think so. I mean, the truth is, yes, the United States has come to Mexico for quite a while, like 3 major attempts, and 2 of them were complete failures. Yet they declared victory afterward, like a victory in the mission to capture Pancho Villa, even though they didn't catch him. It was a victory, that's how they teach us, but in fact, it sounds like they didn't catch him.
So why all this theatrics? Why all this drama? Well, for me, you know that it has taken a lot of reading and hard work to get to this understanding. But you have an experience within the United States. For instance, right now, the excuse about Venezuelan oil, the situation with Mexico, the control of what migration. In other words, that narrative about drugs and the bad guys is used, and many people believe it.
Oil is a much bigger business than any drug, and they really want to have control on it. For instance, the oil in Venezuela has a lot of sulfur and so on. They refer to it as heavy oil instead of sweet oil, which comes out more refined. They say, oh yes, we have the technology to refine that, but we won't build a refinery for it here. Instead, we'll take it to our refinery in California, where all the technology is our property. So you have to sign something stating that you won't disclose to anyone, like an engineer, what you saw here. So it's like, okay, this is the same old neocolonialism where raw materials are extracted and then, finished products are imported, right? But in this situation, your entire economy relies on that, and if you can't refine it, it becomes worth significantly less. I mean, you can still sell it. Let's say sanctions are imposed on countries that buy from you, but you can at least try to sell it, although you'll have to accept just 10% of the price. It's like having basically a button you can press to. What Nixon and Kissinger said about Chile was to make the economy scream, you know? And this was the note they wrote, right? Like, this is important. I mean, in 2019, we saw an example of this. Like, I can't even describe it as an attempted coup, right? Because that attempt was so sad.
your personal experience with drugs inspired you to comprehend everything you later share in your videos about the struggles and interventions. Here in Mexico, we have a National Museum of Interventions in Churubusco. Have you been there?
Well, yes, it's been around 9 years.
So why did you decide to come to Mexico?
I hadn't actually decided to move to Mexico, but I felt the need to leave the country. So I started looking for jobs here, as well as in a few other Latin American countries and some in Asia. Mexico reached out to me first, and I thought, okay, I'll go to Mexico. It will be temporary. Maybe I'll spend 6 months there and then move on to another country or who knows what. That was 10 years ago, and I came here and just stayed.
And here you are. How do you see Mexico at this moment? How?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, the truth is, living in Querétaro is a bit different because, you know, I just came back today. I used to live here in Mexico City before, and coming back feels completely different, right? And I think we often get stuck in a bubble, like when you live in the capital and you surround yourself with other people who might have more.
But did you feel better, humanly speaking, here in Mexico?
Oh, yes.
You're not the only one. Look, there's a book that I can't quite remember the author of right now. I mean, the book is called Twilight of the American Culture.
I think I've seen the title before, but I can't remember the author.
Norman, I think. Maybe not. Anyway, he said, I'm leaving the United States, and he came to Mexico, and here in Mexico he underwent surgery and says, I found the solidarity that couldn't find back there. Not even my neighbors greeted me. In other words, there are many Americans who have come here in search of the soul, the lost spirit, because over there everything is about money, money, cash, cash, drugs, drugs, everywhere, right?
Yes, the truth is, and it's in useful ways that if you grow up there, live there, you don't realize that, hey, we're the only country that does this. And I mean, what has always struck me as funny is when we give money to others like Ukraine or Israel to support all the things their regimes have to pay for. And one of those is socialized health insurance, so that everyone can see a doctor, even if they don't have money. And yet, we can pay for that in other countries for the people there, but we can't do it for ourselves. It's like, why don't we have that? Why don't we have guaranteed maternity leave? Why not? And it's like other countries then say, this is the freest and most civilized country, while all the others are like, you know, putting shoes on a dog, saying, oh, we're superior, and so on, right?
We could chat with you for a long time, no doubt about it, but look, our program time has already run out. Is there something you would like to share regarding this topic and the interventions of Americans from the United States? Surely you know a lot about it.
You can never send an army of just Americans without any local collaborators and expect to do things your way. For instance, we saw 500,000 people in Vietnam, yet it didn't change the Vietnamese government. In the end, they were overthrown, but take Guatemala as an example, a smaller country where only about 400 people were sent from the United States. The rest were individuals with significant ambitions in the military, people who owned a lot of property and didn't want to lose their money. These were the people in the country who said, yes, we will help you eliminate this government. And it's not like we should tell everyone in Latin America, hey, don't be like that, but if you never cooperate with the empire, it's not that they'll never invade you, they'll never occupy you. However, they do lose. But when someone from the country, along with many outsiders, decides to cooperate with them, believing they have our interests at heart, that's when things really go wrong, right? So, I don't know, don't trust the United States.
Well, I encourage the audience to follow you on your channel. It's truly worth it. I mean, it's not just worth it, it's definitely worth watching. Do you do it all by yourself, or do you have a team?
It's just me. That was part of the experience when I started with TikTok. And honestly, you can just create on your phone, right? With YouTube, I thought, this is going to be my chance to learn video editing and all that, which is why some of my early videos are quite experimental and artistic, like the edits and everything.
The one about drugs is super well edited.
Well, yes, it's kind of you. I mean, by the time I got this out, I had already taken this out of my system, like, what do I want to do or not?
Well, thank you very much.
Yes, well, thank you for inviting me.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Ocasiones como esta después de haber escuchado a nuestro
Occasions like this, after listening to our guest, encourage us to reflect on ourselves, challenging the narrative we have been building or that was instilled in us by schools, television, and perhaps even our own parents through the colonization of our minds. In this instance, it's been a great pleasure to have had this guest who clarifies the truth about the issue of drugs and the American interventions in various parts of the world, which are so far removed from the image of democracy, respect for human rights, and adherence to the law that many people hold regarding the different governments of the United States. This isn't about tearing down. It's about building a better world together. I invite you all to join me for the next episode of Gringo.
Option for today and a better tomorrow. IRIB English Radio. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You are listening to the program The Key on Iran Radio with Sheikh Shiraz.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program The Key here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we're going to be looking at a very interesting topic, and that topic is about what are the etiquettes of a judge. Of course, here by judge we mean a judge, the judge who sits in the court and passes judgment over cases, legal cases. In order to answer this question, we can take inspiration from some of the hadiths which have been passed down to us from the infallibles, alayhim as-salam, regarding this topic. In one beautiful hadith, Imam Ali, alayhi as-salam, he said this to a person named Shuray, who he had appointed as a judge. Do not whisper to anyone in your court. And if you get angry, leave, and do not judge while you are angry. So one of the etiquettes of the judge is that he should not pass judgment whilst he is angry, at the time he is angry. In the book, Da'im al-Islam, famous book, the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam forbade a judge to pass judgment whilst being angry, hungry, or tired. So one of the etiquettes of the judge is that he should not pass judgment while he is overcome by sleep or he is excessively tired. Also, in another interesting hadith, the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, the judge should not pass judgment between two people unless he is satiated with food and water. So a condition for the judge is that he should not pass judgment while he is hungry or thirsty excessively, such that it could, you know, affect his judgment. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam narrated, a person was a guest of the commander of the faithful and stayed with him for some days. He then presented him with a prior dispute that he had not mentioned to the commander of the faithful. The Imam alayhi salam said the following to him, are you making a formal complaint? He said, yes. The Imam said, transfer from us, meaning leave our house. For the Messenger of Allah sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam forbade the hosting of a plaintiff for one for whom one is judge, unless the rival plaintiff is also with him, or one of the plaintiffs over the other, by looking at him too much or paying more attention to him. And he also forbade suborning witnesses. So this is another one of those etiquettes of the judge. The judge should not suborn the witness, and he should not favor what witness over the other by excessively looking at him or paying too much attention to him to the detriment of the other. In one hadith, it's been narrated that the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said this to Imam Ali: when two people bring a case against each other before you to be judged, do not judge the first before you hear out the second. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at the etiquettes of judges in the light of the hadith of the infallibles, alayhim wasalam. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
You just listened to the program, The Key, on Iran Radio, with Sheikh Shiraz.
You can also send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
For many Syrians, Israel's latest remarks reinforce a belief that the threat extends far beyond Syria's borders. The statement is widely viewed as an open declaration of hostility toward the region, rather than mere political rhetoric.
This entity threatens the entire Arab world, not just Syria or Palestine. We aren't afraid, but there must be a broader popular response, especially by Arabs. Sadly, people's reactions remain slow, while some governments align with Israel.
Syrians also connect these statements to recent Israeli incursions in the south, including the attack on Beit Jinn. Many view these events as early indicators of a dangerous shift that may eventually demand decisive action.
This regime won't stop at Palestine. It wants full control of the region in order to control all the resources of its people. It has been expanding in southern Syria for over a year now. Resistance is our natural and legitimate response by any means available.
Palestinians see that any confrontation with Israel is part of their struggle, as they have always shared destiny with Syrians. They considered this a common struggle.
We must confront this enemy. We know from our experience as Palestinians that it only responds to force and retreats only when pressured. Diplomacy and agreements have no effect because its nature is rooted in violence. As people and governments, we must resist until all occupied lands, from the Golan to Palestine, are reclaimed.
From Damascus to the southern countryside, Syrians say these threats only strengthen their sense of unity and resolve. As tensions rise, many insist they are prepared to face any challenge to their sovereignty and future. Ali Muhammad, Damascus.
In Tehran, excitement is running high as the 19th Cinema Verite International Documentary Film Festival has opened its doors. Screenings have begun, drawing filmmakers, critics, and enthusiasts.
This year's festival presents a wide range of films with diverse themes, which is one of its main strengths. 68 films compete in the national section, and nearly 70 take part in the international section. We have also added a new category focusing on Iran, its rich history, and the 12-day war. Many of the strongest works we receive belong to this section.
One of the most remarkable features of this year's festival is the